Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market blog. That is what I will link to below this interview. Now, Mark, look, we've talked ad nauseum this week about the pullback in the markets. We have a lot of bear market commentary, but the other aspect that seems to be popping up, and it has popped up this whole year, is inflation versus recession. A lot of people pointing to the inversion of the yield curve that happened for a very short period of time and the doubling of energy prices, as well as a number of other factors that say, look, the U.S. could easily be going into recession in the near term, considering Q1 GDP already came in negative. But that balances out with this inflation narrative where inflation is remaining very high. It might not have gone up this last data point that we got this week, but look, inflation is still historically very high, especially when you compare it to the last couple decades. How are you balancing out this argument? Because while these are not exclusive topics, they are related in many ways.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that, you know, some people with like I do with gray hair, we remember what happened when mainstream economists said you couldn't have inflation and a weak economy, like rising unemployment at the same time, falling unemployment. And sure enough, we get the stagflation. And I think people are more bipolar about it. We go from worrying about inflation to now worrying about recession. When I say that we're not as worried about inflation, here's what I'm looking at. There's these 10-year break-evens, and the break-evens is the difference between the inflation-protected security and the conventional 10-year yield. And that hit a high in late April of about a little bit above 3%. Yesterday, it fell below 260. That's a 40-basis-point drop in inflation expectations in a few weeks. And why do we drop? Partly, I think people think that the Federal Reserve raises rates until something breaks. And so people look at the stock market and the sell in the stock market and think that the first sign of something breaking. That is to say that, as Powell sort of has tried to outline it, that Fed policy is implemented through the financial conditions. And those financial conditions are really the price of money. So you've got essentially three parts of it: equity, interest rates, currency. And so something's going to break means that one of those things, one of the prices of money, or more than one, is going to be very disruptive. And so we're seeing this across the board. So stock market weakness, but the dollar has been strong. And the dollar strength helps curb imported inflation, but it makes the U.S. economy less competitive. And I say this not to take like the short-term moves so seriously, but what I'm looking at is the OECD, the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development. They're like the club for the largest, best, richest economies. They have their own measure of purchasing power parity. So the model, an agreed upon model, if you will, of valuation of the currencies. The euro, sterling, and the yen, by this model, are as cheap as they've ever been. That is more than 30%, say the yen and the euro, more than 30% undervalued. And so that's another thing that's like breaking. You're already seeing some signs of that in U.S. corporate earnings as the large multinationals reported, increasing number of them were complaining about the strength of the dollar. So I think the market's coming around to this view that it's sort of, in some ways, the Fed is damned if they raise interest rates because it drives us into recession. They're damned if they don't raise interest rates because then you have inflation. So I think there's a whole, I'd say it's bigger than a cottage industry whose sole reason d'etre, the reason for being, is to criticize the Federal Reserve. And so no matter what they do, no matter what the Federal Reserve does, they're going to be critical of it. And so I think that it's better to take a step back. And what else could the Fed be doing right now? Maybe they should have raised interest rates earlier. Powell admitted that this week. I sort of was on the argument that the Fed should have stopped buying assets, like mortgage-backed securities when house prices were up 20% year over year, or buying inflation-protected securities, and then using those markets as a gauge of a feedback for their policy. But given that that's like spilled milk, that's like yesterday's story, what should the Fed do going forward? And there seems to me to be full agreement at the Fed of 50 basis point rate hikes for the next two meetings. And then you've got this iffy question about the September FOMC meeting. The market's leaning heavily towards a 50 basis point increase, but it's not fully priced in anymore.
Well, Mark, you raised some good points there as far as setting the table. And yeah, there is a whole cottage industry of people that critique the Fed. That's been going on for decades. But conversely, if the Fed is working hard to defend their integrity, then one has to question why they're working so hard in the first place. And a lot of people have critiqued that they should have started the rate hikes when the market was doing better and when we were booming a little bit more and kept and taking their foot off the gas pedal a little earlier. But to your point, that's all spilled milk. And we do need to look at what they can do moving forward. It seems like everybody's focused on whether the market will break the Fed's plan or not. But you brought up a great point that they really have a lot of different mandates. They have the labor market mandate. They have the health of the economy. And they're also trying to protect the U.S. dollar. And the U.S. dollar has surged from the very low 90s a year ago to over 104 now, well over. It was 104.50 to 104.80 most of this week. So there's a point where the converse of that, the euro, the yen, and the pound that you mentioned are insanely oversold. So do you think, because you spend so much time looking at the currency markets, that we are near a top here in the dollar and are near a bottom in the euro, the yen, and the pound? Will that reverse? And what effect would that have on Fed policy?
Yeah, so that's interesting. I mean, I guess the way I think about it would be that first, that the market does not wait for the Fed to raise interest rates. Think about it. The Fed raised interest rates, say, in March, the first hike. They began putting the market on notice that they were changing their views in September. So I look at the December 2022 Eurodollar futures contract. That implied yield rose by about 100 basis points between September and the time the Fed raised interest rates in March. So the market, I think the Fed's tools are not just what they actually do, raising interest rates, shrinking the balance sheet. The Fed communicates, and that communication channel is very powerful. So I think that the market began tightening for the Fed back in September, around the time that people thought the Fed should be raising interest rates, almost as if the market was saying, we think you should be raising interest rates, and if you don't do it, we'll do it for you. So when it comes to like how far the dollar can fall, how far the dollar can rise, you know, we're getting close to some interesting levels that I think are just attracting people like moths to a flame, like parity in the euro. For the first time in about 3 years, we got above parity, dollar got above parity against the Swiss franc this week. It's got to be like this is the chain. It would be that we need to have a better sense that inflation is a peak. And I agree with you, Corey, that it looks like even if inflation eased a little bit, it didn't ease as much as people thought on the CPI, and we're still at such elevated levels that we're like one shock away from another spike up. But I think that when we see inflation peak, the market will think that, like we're trying to price in now, that maybe the Fed policy is going to peak a bit earlier than we thought, how far they can raise interest rates. And then I think around that same time is when the dollar peaks. And I'd say we could be close. The markets are very stretched. But to me, the dollar, the people are trying to pick a top to the dollar, like people trying to pick a bottom of the stock market. I think it's a bit early. And because there's too many people I hear about, so it's more anecdotal than scientific. But I keep hearing about people trying to pick a bottom in the euro or pick a bottom in the stocks, picking a top in the dollar index. And to me, that means that we really haven't capitulated yet. When I come in the morning and I see that, like everybody and his sister now are talking about a break of parity in the euro or parity in sterling or 150 in dollar yen. If you begin throwing away these like huge numbers as if the cyclical move is really structural. And I haven't seen that capitulation yet. So it wouldn't surprise me if we're close to a dollar extreme, but not quite there yet.
So, Mark, as much as everyone's trying to pick a top in the dollar and a top in interest rates, it also all ties into everyone trying to pick when the Fed is going to reverse course. And I think we do need to understand that when the Fed reverses course, because they're not going to hike rates forever, and who knows, the market, if it continues to move down, might actually force the Fed's hand to reverse course quicker than they want. But a lot of people seem to be expecting the Fed to reverse course in the sense of, instead of raising rates, immediately cutting rates and then starting spending programs. That's not the way we usually see the Fed function. And I think we need to understand that it is more of a process. How are you going to be judging when the Fed is going to slow down? And what do you think is actually going to slow the Fed down from hiking rates? As much as they seem focused on inflation right now, we have seen the markets force their hand many other times.
Yeah, I think this one's going to be a little bit tough to force the Fed's hand. So that is to say that what the Federal Reserve is saying is that they've got to tighten financial conditions. Tightening financial conditions mean interest rates go up, stock market goes down, the dollar goes up. Not necessarily like, you know, different magnitudes, of course. So a falling stock market, or for example, if we get a weaker labor market, I mean, we're still creating like something like 500,000 jobs a month this year, 2 million jobs through the month of April. So we need to see not just a little slowing, but we need to see something that's really like indicating that the Fed is taking, is Fed is tightened too much. They got to break something. And I don't think that like a couple of tenths of a point up in unemployment rate or the slide in the stock market, like where you say from elevated levels, partly reflecting also anticipation of slower earnings growth. I think it's going to take more than that to get the Fed to take their foot off the brake. What it could be is so Bloomberg does these surveys. And these surveys, among other things, they ask about the odds of a recession. The odds of a recession are, in the next year are put at 1 in 4 for the United States. It's closer to 1 in 3 for Europe. And so if Europe slips into a recession, the knock-on effect could hurt us too, and would probably force the Federal Reserve to reevaluate. It's not that they would. It's not that what happens in Europe is the key for the U.S. economy, but it's another one of those factors that would have to be taken into account. And so I think that we have to be careful. I mean, about trying to predict, trying to get the Fed early. I think that I think that hell or high water, the Fed's going to be raising rates 50 basis points at the next two meetings. I think that they're as close to being on autopilot, given the high inflation, given that politicians, Congress, who they are, have to answer to, are, I think that inflation is like the number one problem that America faces right now. And so because of that, I think the Fed's going to be extra vigilant. And that's why I say they're practically on automatic pilot. I think that people to watch, I think, in this regard are like Fed governors, Governor Waller, one of the relatively new members. I think he's been there for about a year, a Trump appointee. Kind of funny, in an interview, he says that Trump not picked him because he thought he was super dovish. And now it turns out that Waller, like his former boss, the St. Louis Fed President Bullard, are among the hawkish members. But I've been looking at this Kashkari from Minneapolis as well. Kashkari, appointed, I believe, by Bush, was a the key here is where the neutral rate for Fed funds. And Kashkari was a dove, and he sees the neutral rate to be around 2%. So if you give me the next 100 basis point hikes in the next two meetings, give me a modest one in September, I'd say we're near Kashkari's neutral level. So the big dove's neutral level by early Q4, which just points to the idea the Fed maybe, rather than to your point about reversing itself, maybe it's just pauses, or maybe it goes to back to 25 basis point increases, takes a slower bite of things as the Fed funds rate approaches that neutral level.
Yeah, Mark, I think that's a great point. So many people have binary thinking where they're going to hike, and then they're going to start cutting. But there's plenty of things they can do. They can ratchet down the pace from 50 basis points to 25 basis points first. They can then pause for a long period of time. They can try to kind of jawbone the markets into submission for a while, or give some signals and then change their mind on it. And then they can eventually go to cutting. So there's a lot of things they can do in that interim period. And then the market will kind of suss out where it wants to go. But you brought up one of the biggest problems is inflation. And there's two really elements to the inflation story. There's the demand pull side of things from all the buying we saw from the consumers. But the consumers are getting tapped out now. They've tapped out their savings. We're not getting free helicopter money anymore. And we are seeing a huge increase in credit cards and people living off credit. So that can only persist for so long. And on the other side of the inflation front is the cost push side of it, where businesses are feeling the inflation pressures and have to pass that along to the consumers by rising their prices. So consumers are getting hit on both ends. They're tapped out for spending and what they can actually purchase moving forward. And the businesses have to rise their prices to deal with not just the high price of inflation, but also the high price of rising wages. So do you think those could be the kind of forces that actually impact the economy from this inflation backdrop we have?
Yeah, I suppose you're right. That, you know, that's what businesses will say, you know, about the wages. They have to raise prices because of the wages. But when you look at the S&P 500, these days I work a lot closer with small and medium-sized businesses, and the numbers are different for them. But these large businesses, if you look at like the S&P 500, I think if you look at their labor bill, it's less than 12% of their revenue. I think that what's happened is that for many years, businesses could not raise prices. There was no pricing power, foreign competition, all kinds of factors. And I think that there's an opportunity to raise prices here, and they're pressing with it. Well, how it plays out, I think, I think that the weakness, and this is, I think, both politics and economic weakness, is that the purchasing power of middle-class America, like middle-class British, like middle-class in many countries, is getting squeezed. And I know, I fully get it that, of course, the people with lower income spend a bigger part of their income on these fixed costs, like housing, food, energy. And the difference, I think, is that sort of this rising expectations idea. The middle class had hoped for better things, while many people in poverty, not that they accept their lot, but I think that they're used to it, and they don't have much higher expectations that the systems are delivered for them. It's more disenchanted. And so I think that when it affects the middle class, I think it has much more economic impact. And I think that's why I think that many people are thinking that the Republicans are going to gain both houses of Congress, that people blame, rightly or wrongly, the inflation on the Democrats, higher gas prices, higher food prices on Democrats. And I think they'll be punished in November. I think that's like the logic of it. Whether that narrative is really true or not is a different matter. I think that the inflation is part of the inflation is disruption to supply coming out of this pandemic. And there's no central bank that was wasn't surprised by the duration, the persistence, or the amplitude of inflation. Some countries raised interest rates a bit before the U.S., but not the big ones, not the European Central Bank, not the Bank of Japan, not the Chinese Central Bank. There were some smaller countries who tend to be very open and very the feed through into inflation is greater. But even look at the Federal Reserve itself, leaving aside Powell, he didn't get the sense to raise interest rates earlier. And even now, you know, we had one dissent in March in favor of a 50 basis point rate hike. But when they hiked 50 basis points, there were no dissensions from that. These aren't just casual, like, stick your finger up in the air, see which way the wind's blowing. These are the number of people. And again, not just in the United States. So I think that we're unprecedented times. And I know when I'm like, it sort of reminds me of like Three Card Monty in the streets of New York. When you're not playing, you have a strong opinion and you're right. It's when you're playing that things change. I think it's like a lot of my friends who are Monday morning quarterbacks. They probably haven't picked up a pigskin in years, but they can tell you what a coach is doing wrong. And so I think it's easy to criticize the Federal Reserve, what they should have done, what they could have done. And I was one of those people that criticized them. But when we think about what they need to do now, I think that 50 basis points seems to be the prudent answer here.
Well, and that seems to be what the market thinks is going to continue as well. Even when the market got a little overheated and thought we might see a 75 basis point hike, the Fed has been pretty straightforward with everybody saying this is the process. And now we're still in the early stages of this process. The market sure doesn't like it, but the Fed has said they're okay with a bit of market weakness. And what we talked about this whole week is this sell-off, this bear market or early on bear market has actually been quite orderly. We'll see where it goes. But boy, oh boy, this week really was a wake-up call, I think, for a lot of investors, again, that said no asset class is safe if we truly are in a bear market. Mark, thank you, as always, for your time, buddy. Great chatting with you. We'll chat again next week. I hope you have a great weekend.
Good luck. Thanks. Good luck, everybody.